suffer from extortion, or even yourself to be susceptible to extortion. That one says one has certain principles. If these principles are not followed, then there is a price to be paid. And that creates a standard and a general deterrent. And I think it is important for those people who feel that their principles have been violated in the way that the democratic primary process has been run, or how Chelsea Manning has been imprisoned for 35 years and tortured, or the Espionage Act crackdowns, or many other things, to go, okay, well, there's a cost to violating principles, even if there's also a cost to yourself, even if you don't like the risk, which seems to be getting very small, but the risk that Donald Trump becomes president, that one has to have a lion somewhere. Otherwise, as each election cycle proceeds, you are pushed further and further into the corner.
That's WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange speaking at the Green Party convention in Houston via video stream from the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he's been holed up for more than 4 years. He was speaking with the Green Party's David Cobb. For transcript podcasts, more, go to democracynow.org. Special thanks to John Hamilton. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Come over here to the right-hand speaker.
KBOO's book and record sale is happening August 13th at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street, starting at noon. Find treasures amongst the stacks of donated items while raising money for KBOO, your very own community radio station.
Friction between the stylus and the record produces a force which makes the arm try to swing towards the record center.
Again, that's KBOO's book and record sale, Saturday, August 13th from noon to 7 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm now standing in the center, and my voice should be located precisely midway between the speakers.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Abrupt Climate Change. I talk with Dr. Guy McPherson Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost in Portland. Dr. Guy McPherson is a professor of conservation biology and an author. He'll present his synthesis of the current peer-reviewed research on Earth's recent phase of rapid warming. Again, that's Abrupt Climate Change. A talk with Dr. Guy McPherson, Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost, 3120 North Williams Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 5:02. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, records show that lead filters previously used in Portland public schools were ineffective.
Black Lives Matter has endorsed the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement in solidarity with the people of Palestine.
And new research shows the human species could go extinct as soon as the year 2030. We speak with Dr. Guy McPherson.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 8th, 2016. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Natasha Delapine. Records show that lead filters previously used in Portland public schools were ineffective. For years now, the PPS district knew there was lead in its water. They had filters installed that they believed would remove the lead from their water. The problem is, the filters they bought were not certified to filter lead. All the filters were meant to do was make the water look, taste, and smell better. The old ineffective filters cost less than the $13 a piece at the time of their purchase in 2008. Effective lead filters would cost around $100 each.
School officials say five faucets and one drinking fountain at an elementary school in Salem have tested above the action level for lead. A spokesman for the Salem-Keizer Public School District tells the Statesman Journal that the six water sources at Wright Elementary School are no longer in service as of Friday. The school district's action level for lead is 15 parts per billion. That level is stricter than the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's level of 20 parts per billion. According to the school, one faucet at the elementary school tested as high as 59 parts per billion.
A group of local alternative finance experts is getting together tonight for their first time to talk about how to leverage their power of public money to break the power of Wall Street, as on local communities. Diane Freeney is a self-described reformed investment banker. She is agitating the Oregon State Investment Board to pull state pensions from hedge funds and invest public money in local institutions, including affordable housing. Freeney is inviting her neighbors over for a potluck and listening to last month's TED Talks at Mount Hood Community College by Rakyuka Adams, an African-American woman born and raised in Northeast Portland, who is also floating new ideas on how the investment board does business. Freeney says the people have the power. It's just a matter of taking it back.
Now, Diane, one time I heard you publicly discuss what a game changer it would be if certain large universities in the Portland metro area divested the pension money that they had invested in hedge funds and instead invested it into affordable housing in the city of Portland. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
Well, I've been going to the Oregon Investment Council and just sitting and listening since March. So like four different meetings. And I've listened to several, what I will call hedge funds. Sometimes they're called alternative investments, sometimes private equity, come in. And the committee votes them on the recommendation of staff, additional investments of, say, $250 to $400 million at one pop. The first meeting I was at, I heard words like, we go to the bad banks, the bad banks, the bad banks, foreclosures, and steal. And I thought, this is not appropriate for public money. So what can we do with that? So if we had, at a meeting, we went there and we said, okay, fine, we're Oregonians, we want to invest in Oregon. These people are investing in Singapore and Hong Kong and London. What's wrong with Oregon? We have smart people in Oregon. We have needs in Oregon. The housing market is crazy in Oregon right now. What would happen if instead of doing these large chunks of investment, we put them back into the mortgage market in Portland and in Oregon, because it can't just be Portland. All of a sudden, we've got people who are selling mortgages into the secondary market, which means they're going back into kind of hedge funds and other entities like that, and they could keep them in their portfolio. For example, the credit unions in Oregon, they all sell mortgages into the secondary market. People think they're doing a good job by going to their credit union and getting a mortgage, but they are. It's a much better than going to, for example, JP Morgan Chase or Bank of America, but they're still sold into the secondary market. And the credit unions I know say, well, we'll help people if they get into trouble. It's just better if we keep it here. And then, you know, there's all sorts of games that banks play around foreclosures. They make money on foreclosures. They make money on making you homeless. And that costs us money as Oregonians, as people that are, taxpayers. And so I would just say to the Oregon Investment Council, you know, enough of hedge funds, enough of that. We're just going to keep it in Oregon mortgages, 3%. We work through credit unions and local banks, no more big banks. And I think that we'll look back 10 years from now and we'll think, weren't we brilliant? Weren't we brilliant?
What are the obstacles to getting them to stop investing in hedge funds and bring it back to what people need? What are the obstacles?
The hedge funds will tell you they can get superior returns. And that probably was true right in the beginning. That was maybe 20, 25 years ago. And I remember when it happened, the hedge funds industry convinced people they had to do things secretly, transparently. It's hard to track them which is a no-no as far as I'm concerned. And I believe the law in Oregon now is transparency, although I don't see the hedge funds being transparent. It's not happening.
That was Diane Freeney talking about how to agitate the state to divest from hedge funds and invest public money locally. Find out more about her work at www.rootedinvesting.com.
The state of Oregon will soon be raising the bottle deposit rate from 5 cents to 10 cents in an effort to raise redemption rates, which have been sagging in recent years. The change is slated to go into effect January 1, 2017. At this time, the deposit will begin to apply to glass, metal, and plastic containers, except those used for milk. Oregon was the first state to require a deposit on soft drink and beer containers beginning in 1971. For the first 15 years after the law went into effect, redemption rates were over 90%. New data from the state says the number now is less than 70%.
The parent company of Monsanto has filed a motion in the U.S. District Court to dismiss a lawsuit brought by the city of Portland over polychlorinated biphenyl compounds known as PCBs. Monsanto was the only U.S. producer of PCBs from 1935 until 1979, when Congress passed the Toxic Substances Control Act, which banned the manufacture and most uses of PCBs. The city filed suit earlier this year, claiming that Monsanto knew for decades that PCBs were toxic and hazardous to humans and the environment. The suit alleges that Monsanto kept that information from the public in order to continue to profit off the product. The motion to dismiss, filed by Monsanto, claims that, despite the prevalence of PCBs in Portland Harbor and the Willamette River, the company never produced nor discharged PCBs in the Portland Harbor area. Monsanto further claims that the city of Portland itself was a major emitter of PCBs and is responsible for the release of PCBs into the environment. Meanwhile, the U.S. House of Representatives has inserted language into a bill reauthorizing the Toxic Substance Control Act that would grant immunity to Monsanto for injuries caused by PCB contamination and exposure.
New research from Oregon State University shows that earthquakes occur along the Cascadia subduction zone more often than previously thought. In this new study, researchers looked at core samples of ocean floor sediment and found the gap between quakes is 400 to 500 years instead of the 500 to 530 years as previously thought. With the last major quake happening in January 1700, the odds show a 15 to 20% chance of a major earthquake along the subduction zone off the Oregon coast happening within the next 50 years.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for a live interview with ecologist and evolutionary biologist Guy McPherson about abrupt climate change. At 6, it's Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class. That's followed by Prison Pipeline at 6:30. Imalugo hosts a roundtable discussion on the subject of autism and the criminal justice system. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. News and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather, a 30% chance of showers, mainly before 11 p.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 60. Northwest wind, 5 to 8 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Tomorrow, a 20% chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 72. Today in history, in 1974, a television address to the nation, President Richard Nixon announced his resignation. He left office the following day. The quote of the day is from Richard Nixon, who said, "Always remember, others may hate you, but those who hate you don't win unless you hate them. And then you destroy yourself."
Black Lives Matter has endorsed the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement in solidarity with the people of Palestine. To find out more, KBOO reporter Doug McVeigh spoke with Ned Roche from the Portland chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace.
Could you first of all tell us something about the BDS?
Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, or BDS, is a call that came out from Palestinian civil society back in 2005. It was more than 170 different Palestinian civil society organizations coming together to basically follow the South African model of liberation. And that was when apartheid South Africa was being supported by the United States and most governments or many governments around the world. It was the people of the world that responded to a call from South Africa, South African black people and others who wanted liberation in that country from apartheid, who engaged in the boycott of South Africa. And that wasn't the only thing that brought an end to apartheid, but it certainly was a significant contribution to that end. So the Palestinians have made a similar call. And Jewish Voice for Peace and many other organizations that are in solidarity with Palestinian and people's struggles for justice have endorsed that call. So it is significant that Black Lives Matter has also endorsed the call because, you know, I think to many of us, Black Lives Matter is one of the most important movements in our country today. And for them to take this stand is very important.
Back in the apartheid days, during the divestiture campaign, many people on the other side argued that divestment would hurt blacks in South Africa because of the lack of economic investment. Obviously, the cultural and economic boycott certainly raised a lot of awareness and contributed to the downfall of apartheid. People are presumably making the same argument that an economic boycott of Israel could hurt the Palestinians somehow. How do people respond to that?
Well, it's a great question you raise, and it's interesting that, by and large, the people that raise that question or have that objection to boycott, divestment, and sanctions, or BDS, are not the Palestinians themselves. It's people that are opposed to BDS and are looking for reasons or excuses that those of us who favor BDS could find a way out or could be proved wrong. So it's the Palestinians themselves that have made this call for us to boycott companies that are profiting from the illegal occupation by Israel of Palestinian lands. So, you know, it's an interesting argument, but it really doesn't hold a lot of water because, again, it's not the Palestinians who, by and large, the overwhelming majority of them have responded to this question by saying, some of us in the short run may suffer, but we're not looking at this in the short run. We're looking at this in terms of the end game, which is justice for all the peoples of the Middle East and certainly for the Palestinian people. And one way to bring that about or to help to bring that about is through boycotts. So that's the response that I think is important for people to know when hearing that objection.
The parallels people have been talking about between Gaza and Ferguson, could you speak to that at all?
Well, it's pretty fascinating in that when things erupted in Ferguson and the police were using pepper spray and all kinds of other, quote, crowd control tactics, very, very early on, people in the streets in Ferguson were getting texts and emails and all kinds of other things from people in Gaza, giving them advice on how to withstand some of those police tactics. And there have been delegations of Black Lives Matter people that have gone to Gaza, gone to the West Bank and Palestine. And there is a solidarity that is growing between these two liberation struggles. And it's also interesting that, you know, many of the police forces in this country have received either directly or indirectly training from the Israelis. There are police forces that actually go over to Israel to receive training. And so some of the tactics that you see that have been experimented on Palestinian bodies are now used back in our country, unfortunately. on largely people of color and other bodies that, you know, police feel are in the way.
Ned, do you have any closing thoughts for our listeners? And where can people find out more about your organization, Jewish Voices for Peace, and the BDS movement?
So if you'd like to find out more about Jewish Voice for Peace, it's jvp.org. That's jvp.org. And if you're interested in the BDS movement, it's bdsmovement.net, bdsmovement.net.
All right. Well, I thank you so much for your time. Again, we've been speaking to Ned Roche with Jewish Voice for Peace, the Portland chapter, about the Black Lives Matter movement endorsing the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Ned, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
This is Doug McVeigh with KBOO News.
Last week, Center for Biological Diversity sued the state of California over its support of an aquifer exemption that would allow fracking companies to discharge oil, wastewater into an aquifer in San Luis Obispo, California. The lawsuit claims regulators failed to properly follow the California Environmental Quality Act and asked the court to set aside the state's approval to turn the aquifer into a waste dump for oil and other fracking fluids. The state of California submitted the aquifer exemption to the federal EPA for approval earlier this year. Besides oil and other petrochemicals, the exemption would allow the disposal of benzene into the aquifer at levels up to 1,000 times over the federal EPA limit. Another chemical to be injected into the aquifer is thallium. Thallium is extremely toxic and was used for years as a main ingredient in rat poison. It is the first attempted aquifer exemption pursued by the state of California since it was found to have illegally allowed oil and natural gas companies to dump contaminated fracking waste into aquifers that were protected under both California state law and the United States Clean Water Act. At least 3 billion gallons of highly polluted fracking wastewater was disposed of, according to the state documents.
The Gallup Polling Organization has released the results of a new survey on marijuana use by adults in the U.S. According to Gallup, one of every eight adults in the U.S. admits to being a current marijuana user. That's 13% of the adult population of the U.S. 3 years ago, the Gallup poll found that only 7% of adults admitted to being current marijuana users. Drug policy analysts contend this change does not represent any actual significant increase in marijuana use, but rather that more people who are marijuana users are willing to admit it. Currently, four U.S. states and the District of Columbia have at least partly legalized adult social use of marijuana. In the general election this November, up to five more states, including California, will vote on measures to at least partly legalize marijuana. And now, we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The National Education Association is one of America's biggest unions with 3 million members. NEA Vice President Becky Pringle says the union is all in for Hillary Clinton for president. But the NEA is not just dumping money into politicians' bank accounts. Much of what the NEA will be doing is one-on-one contact and conversations with voters nationwide.
We have members in every congressional district in this nation. At 3 million people, one in every 100 people in the United States is a member of the NEA. Think about that. Now let's expand that to families. We have huge reach. And so when you talk about the individual, it's about those individual conversations. We're looking at really elevating that individual voice and how much of a difference it makes.
Speaking to Bernie Sanders supporters, Pringle says they should not feel as if they lost because they built an amazing movement that can play a big role in the future, a future that belongs to youth.
Don't feel as though you lost. Look at what you've gained. You have started a movement, and guess what? This is your world to inherit. And think about this as one step toward that world you want to create. And we need you to be engaged, and we need you to be involved, and we need you to move us further down that road.
Billionaire Carl Icahn says he's closing the Taj Mahal Casino in Atlantic City rather than negotiate with strikers to reach a deal. Unite Here Local 54 president Bob McDevitt says Icahn has taken hundreds of millions of dollars out of Atlantic City and promised to put $100 million into the Taj Mahal. The union says Icahn's my way or the highway attitude isn't trying to reach an agreement, it's punishing working people for standing up to injustice. The AFL-CIO is co-hosting a conference on racial, ethnic, and gender inequality August 9th through the 11th. Howard University and the Washington Center for Equitable Growth are the other co-hosts. Some of America's top economic minds will participate in the National Economic Association Freedom and Justice Conference. They'll be looking at the impacts of racial, ethnic, and gender wage disparities on the economy. Other topics will include the economic impacts of the minimum wage, mass incarceration, and a changing labor market.
Brought to you by the IBEW, 750,000 men and women powering the way for an American comeback. Information on how to become an International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers power professional is online at ibew.org. Workers Independent News is proud to be heard on The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Live nationwide weekdays noon to 3 p.m. at theunionedge.com.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
A class action lawsuit was filed today by seven Ingrigit refugee workers against Portland Specialty Banking, LLC, also known as PSB. The production line workers are claiming that PSB violated overtime laws and paid sick leave. Here to talk to us today in studio is Karina Spencer Sherrick, from the Northwest Workers Justice Project, along with Manuel Pena and Alma Raya. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First of all, let's talk about the workers and what they've been going through to get to this point with the lawsuit. Can you tell us a little bit about them and how they came to ST here?
Yes. So today we filed the class action lawsuit, as you mentioned, for the purpose of responding to the fact that the workers aren't receiving overtime correctly, and they worked long shifts. So the Portland Specialty Baking is an industrial bakery where they create a variety of baked goods for sale at Starbucks, Jamba Juice, even at Winco and under the Franz Bakery label. And they work those industrial shifts, 10, 12 or more hours a day. And they also work many days a week. So part of what's interesting about manufacturing laws is that they are particularly focused at protections for workers because of the difficult and dangerous nature of the work.
And would Manuel or Alma be able to describe for me the day you at work or the week? How long would your schedule be? Would you have a 40-hour work week? Do you have how much overtime do you have during the week? And do you have breaks?
Si tiene breaks, ¿cuánto tiempo trabaja? ¿Qué días son los más largos para usted?
Los días más largos para mí es trabajar overtime o más de 12 horas.
The longest days for me are when I'm working overtime, which is over 12 hours.
How often do you work over 12 hours during the week?
¿Qué tan seguido? Pues no muy seguido, porque yo nomás trabajo 12 horas, pero mis compañeros han pasado ese problema que ellos trabajan muy duro para mucho tiempo.
It doesn't happen often. I only work 12 hours, but it happens to a lot of my coworkers that they work a lot.
How long have you been working at PSB?
Ya completé un año de trabajar ahí en.
I have been working here for 1 year.
And how long have the violations? How have you been noticing the violations this whole year, or have?
Las violaciones las has mirado todo este año.
Sí.
So what's interesting about manufacturing workers is that anything over 10 hours a day is actually overtime. So in addition to weekly overtime other workers receive, daily overtime is manufacturing workers also get daily overtime. So in Manuela's case and others, they aren't getting both types of overtime when they should be. And that violation has been going on the whole time.
And can you describe a day for us, perhaps, at PSB, when you'd be working overtime, when you have a break, for example, you're able to be at work but not having to be overworked at the same time, and you're being denied pay. Are you still everything that you do at your work? Could you describe just maybe one day?
Puedes describir un día donde has trabajado overtime y que toda la semana has trabajado mucho y que si cómo está cuando no te dan descansos y todo eso.
He trabajado 3 semanas seguiditos de 40 horas o 10 horas diario y ellos te dan break cuanto ellos se le da la gana. Pasan de 2 horas o 3 horas y media y luego te dan break.
I have worked for over 10 hours and more than 40 hours a week, and they only give me breaks whenever they want to. Whenever they feel like it, they'll give me a break. It could be 2 hours, it could be 1 hour, whenever they feel like it.
And the workers are standing on their feet this whole time. I mean, you can imagine how difficult it might be to stand, even with 10-minute breaks, if they receive the 10-minute breaks under the law, how difficult that work might be. And so the law in Oregon actually says that manufacturing workers are not allowed to work more than 13 hours in 24 hours, period. So that is another violation that we've brought in our lawsuit, that they to try to stop the PSB production line employees from working more than 13 hours, because the law recognizes that it's so dangerous and so difficult to do that work that there's just a maximum. Even if you pay overtime, you can't have somebody work that long.
How long have you noticed in the lawsuit? How long has it been that this has been going on, according to the plaintiffs of the case?
So we've reviewed records for the last 2 years, and for at least that long that's been going on.
Thank you. And for your experience as a worker there, what have you seen? What is the main complaint for your fellow workers at PSB? What is their main complaint? Is it simply the lack of overtime, or is it the lack of breaks and or being on feet for so long?
¿Cuál es el los compañeros de trabajo en qué se quejan más? ¿Es estando de pies, estando muchas horas trabajando? ¿Qué son las cosas que más dicen los compañeros?
Lo que dicen los compañeros son es que están en la misma posición en 10 horas o 12 horas y tenemos que turnearnos diferentes lugares para cambiar el movimiento del cuerpo.
The most complaint is about having to do the same things over and over, is repetitive moves, and for long periods of time, for 12 hours and more hours. So we need to change positions to feel better.
The other thing that is important to note is that the Portland Specialty Baking also, we believe, is violating the new Oregon paid sick leave law. So when there are injuries, or when people are not feeling well, they actually receive written warnings anytime they take that legally protected leave. And we think that's illegal under our new protections.
So what I gather from this is you're being allowed to work more than your body would be healthily allow, but at the same time, your health is being disregarded within the system that you've described. What is the main health complaint that you've had because of this practice?
Te hacen trabajar más de lo que tu cuerpo puede tener para estar saludablemente, pero a la misma vez la compañía te castiga si llamas para si estás enferma.
Sí. A mí me ha pasado, me castigan porque yo no obedezco lo que ellos dicen, yo obedezco lo que dice el horario que me ponen para trabajar, y yo me voy. Entonces a la semana, el otro schedule, me ponen 2-3 días de castigo.
Yes, this this does happen whenever I call or when I leave at the time I'm supposed to leave because I'm not feeling well. I am punished, and for the next schedule, I don't have the same amount of hours.
I see. So depending on the amount, you know, the finances that you can gain from it, those may or may not be there depending on your health. It sounds like there's this lawsuit is protecting more than just the sick leave itself but the actual worker's health as well. It sounds like being overworked obviously isn't contributing to anyone's health at this time, and those laws are meant to protect that.
I think that's true. I mean, obviously there's Oregon has understood that manufacturing is difficult and that it needs extra protections because of the inherent dangers. And we're also obviously it's compounded by the fact that there are limitations and barriers to getting the paid sick leave that people are supposed to receive. So you're right. There is definitely a connection.
At risk of losing your paycheck because being cut hours, for example, as a reprimand for having need for paid sick leave.
Right. I mean, I think the lawsuit really focuses on this failure to pay overtime that people are entitled to, preventing over 13 hours a day, and the paid sick leave. But you can see that based on Manuela's experience, this work is very difficult, and it's important to protect these workers' rights.
And what would you like to see changed, Manuela? What was your desired outcome for this lawsuit?
¿Qué es lo que te gustaría mirar cambiado después de esta demanda? ¿Qué es lo que tú quieres mirar?
Me gustaría que ellos, el dueño nos prometió, hace un año nos prometió que si yo no votara por Unión, me iban a cambiar la línea de pastel donde yo estaba y hasta ahorita no he visto nada.
I was promised that I was gonna, they told me to not vote for the union and that they would change me to the cakes line, and so far they haven't done anything, and I can tell they were lying.
So you would like to move on from your current position in production and manufacturing, but to a different line within the same company, and you'd like to be able to move forward in the same company and be able to continue within that capacity as a baker and continue down that route, but still get paid what you're required and have sick time when you're required.
¿Te gustaría cambiar esto y que pudieras avanzar en la misma compañía sin tener que pasar
sí. Presto? Sí, me gustaría eso.
Yes, I would really like that.
Yeah, I think the goal really is to make this a better working place for all the workers there. I mean, I think the law obviously needs to be followed to make sure that this group of mostly immigrant and refugee workers receive the pay and the working conditions that they deserve.
And Lisa, it's just under a minute we have left. Could you describe the amount of time that this turnaround will be able to affect the workers here at PSB?
Well, I mean, it's a lawsuit, so we obviously don't know exactly how long that'll take. But, you know, obviously we hope that the Portland Specialty Baking will work with us to try to make those changes sooner rather than later.
Thank you. And it sounds like those talks are continually happening with PSB between the workers and them as well?
Well, we've definitely reached out to them, and we're hoping for a good result.
Thank you. Thank you both, or all three of you, rather, for coming in today. And thank you for translating, especially. And thank you, Manuela, for coming in. And thank you for working on this case. I appreciate you all coming in for the interview today, as well as the work you're doing to protect your rights at PSB.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next we have an Israeli has announced plans to deport foreign members of the Boycott Divest and Sanctions Movement, a pro-Palestine activist group. Israeli ministers plan to form a task force to locate and spy on these activists so that they can be removed from the country. This is the latest effort by Israel to take down the BDS movement, a group that calls for boycott of Israel goods in protest of the occupation of Palestinian lands. The task force will also seek to keep boycott activists from entering the country. These foreign activists have been accused of spreading violence in the West Bank by Israeli officials. However, pro-Palestinian groups have defended the involvement of international volunteers, stating that they have helped decrease the violence against Palestinians and have said that deporting them would lead to further unrest in the region.
A transgender Filipino woman in Hong Kong wants legal review of a police decision to place her in an all-male correctional facility. In 2015, Navarro Luigi Ricasa was sentenced to 20 months in the all-male Peak Uk correctional facility in Hong Kong for drug and immigration offenses. In the facility, she was forced to undress entirely in front of male guards, was sexually harassed, and was denied hormone treatment. Denial of her hormone treatment caused Ricasa psychological trauma, along with the physical abuse she suffered in the facility. The thought of male attributes reappearing resulted in her becoming depressed. Ricasa believes her treatment was unconstitutional and a breach of her human rights. Her hearing began yesterday in Hong Kong and continues today.
Last week, the National Atmospheric and Oceanographic Administration had released its annual State of the Climate report, showing that last year was the hottest on record. Scientists believe the extreme weather of 2015 was caused by a combination of global climate change and an unusually large El Niño event. The report states that the greenhouse gases are the highest on record, and the CO2 level has now hit the 400 parts per million. The study also found that the sea surface temperatures were the highest on record, and that globally, sea levels have risen an average of 2.75 inches since 1993. The report predicts that although areas defined as in a drought rose by 5%, the warming atmosphere was causing increased rainfall and severe flooding in areas around the globe.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jumani Ward-Lewis, Morgan Lloyd, Jenna Yokoyama, Layla Yao, John Pacheco, Ken Jones, and Al Khan. The producer is Doug McVeigh. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. Also, special thanks to Mike Fotoklis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Natasha Delapine. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. The hosts take your calls and discuss the media landscape in the age of the Donald. At 9, on Alternative Radio, physicist, scholar, and activist Vandana Shiva speaks on We Are All Seeds. At 10, Air Cascadia is off. We'll hear Flashpoints, Investigative News Radio with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Andre Middleton hosts a Share Your Art News call-in show. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
Now stay tuned for a live interview with ecologist and evolutionary biologist Guy McPherson about abrupt climate change. Good night, Natasha.
Good night.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
As most scientists will tell you, climate change is a known threat to the environment and all species of plant and animal life on Earth, but it might be even worse than anticipated, according to Dr. Guy McPherson, an ecologist and evolutionary biologist who coined the phrase near-term human extinction. According to McPherson, the human species could go extinct as soon as the year 2030 due to habitat loss and rapidly accelerating global warming.
McPherson will be speaking tonight in Portland on abrupt climate change in Cascadia at the Waypost, 3120 North Williams Avenue. The talk goes from 6:30 to 9 p.m. and admission is free. We're fortunate to have Dr. McPherson here live in the KABU studios to give us a preview of the talk. Guy McPherson, welcome and thanks for coming into KABU.
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Now, most of us are familiar with the term climate change, but what's abrupt climate change?
Yeah, abrupt climate change refers to a very rapid rise in global average temperature within a short period of time. It's a phenomenon with precedence in Earth history, up to 5 degrees Celsius global average temperature rise in a period of 13 years, about 56 million years ago. So this is before there were humans on the planet, obviously.
What caused it then? Do we know? Do scientists know?
Probably it was a massive methane release associated with volcanism. But, you know, we weren't keeping good records.
Right. It wasn't man-made, though, obviously, at that time.
No, that's right. That's right.
It wasn't chlorofluorocarbons.
Right. And so we have, at this point, we refer to climate change, and we're talking about anthropogenic climate change. We're talking mostly about carbon dioxide that human activities put into the atmosphere. And what we're talking about now, and what I talk about, is events being out of our hands. That we've triggered events that take this beyond human control and into the arena of the Earth is in charge now.
I'm interested, how'd you arrive at your conclusions on abrupt climate change that differs, I guess, from some scientists?
Right. And I've been studying climate change and thinking the linear Al Gore inconvenient truth style climate change since the early 1980s in graduate school. And then I edited a book along with a colleague in 2002. It was published in 2003, and it was about climate change. And specifically, it was about precipitation. Up till this point, most scientists had been focused on temperature rise, and there had been very little study of ecosystem impacts, and particularly the influence, the weather and climate influence that is really huge, especially in the Intermountain West, which is where I was. And that's precipitation. So most people were ignoring that. So that was the focus of the book. That was in 2002. I concluded at that point that we were probably beyond the series of tipping points that we knew about then, and that we had triggered events that would take this whole set of living arrangements we take for granted beyond the ability of humans to survive in a pretty short period of time.
Now, when you say beyond the